KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to the Report to Monitor White Supremacy. Today we're going in depth into three separate but related stories exploring the appalling degree of racism, both interpersonal and systemic, that floods our public institutions and apparatuses, and what happens when it rears its hideous head in our political leaders and intersects with our streets, often in tragically violent ways. I spoke yesterday with racial justice organizer with Don't Shoot PDX and bureaucracy saboteur Teresa Rayford, who this past Friday facilitated a protest in Oregon State Capitol. In addition to a segment from that interview, in the following clips you'll hear Maria Garcia, an activist and owner of Revolucion Coffee House, and Teresa Rayford alternately speaking in the Capitol building in Salem, and also in front of the Department of Corrections where the protest ended.
Fear for their lives. I don't care if they're in jail. They have lived already 60, 90, 6 months in solitary confinement. We have one of the victims of the lockdown in solitary confinement for 9 months.
Just for speaking out.
Yes, he's at it already 4 months just because he felt like it. This guy, Jaime Rodriguez, was a victim of white supremacists. Jaime is taking pills. He's in solitary confinement. You know what it is? 23 hours lockdown in a space where, you know, they have enough room just for him. These people need help. They need to remove the solitary confinement as a way of torture, of punishment. That's inhumane.
They need to stop using racial intimidation against people. The same white supremacists that killed Larnell Bruce, that is being indicted on hate crime charges, was in the state penitentiary. There's a group there that's called the European Kindred, and there's other groups in there. They assist law enforcement in being a vehicle of harassment and intimidation. They have been used to assault people, they have been used to murder people, they have been used to intimidate people. This is happening in all of our jails throughout the state of Oregon.
Their grievances are not being processed, and we know that, and we have the testimony of 5 different inmates, and I will send them and we will make them public.
So what we're here today is the people that we've worked with that have basically testified to us that they've had issues is that we want the Department of Corrections to do an immediate outside investigation. We understand that from our conversations that the Inspector General has given us a report that he had found no wrongdoing. What we would like is a full investigation of all of the claims that we brought to the table, as well as some reporting and audits of the complaint filing process. Where does that process go? How does it work? And what is the follow-up? We need to see that measurable outcomes in the whole filing complaint process, because racial intimidation has escalated since the campaigning of Donald Trump. And we know that in January, there's going to be an additional rise to that. We need the systems in Oregon that are respectful to the needs of people that are not only incarcerated in our jail systems, but also facilitating the safety of our children and our education systems. We need them to give us clear levels of opportunity to know that when an issue is brought up, that there is going to be an investigation, that we're not going to use conversations to mediate these issues, that a zero tolerance hate ban on language that we know is affiliated with racial violence and sexual violence, that there's an immediate ban. We can't afford the luxury of mediating these issues away, and we can't have the luxury of saying that hate speech in Oregon is free speech. We need systems that contain human bodies to have the human rights and dignity and have the foresight to put some type of conditioning in their existing policy that keeps safety and protocol in an established format.
Well, and I think it's significant for you to know, too. I mean, we've already had several times. We're going to meet again and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think we sent that out to your other representatives. So as an agency, we're going to go ahead and meet as soon as we set that time in January.
Right. But we want to make sure that there's policies in place that show, like, we've asked for the reporting and auditing of how those, from the time that somebody makes a complaint, I would like to see it. We need to see, what does the reporting look like? What does the auditing that we're asking for look like in terms of, this is how many complaints were filed, this is how the complaints were handled, and these are the outcomes, this is how we follow up. Those are the things that I would like. I said that at the first time that we had the meeting. I know that my comrades had came there for specific things, but I think that that's a big umbrella that shows that there is a safety protocol to deal with these issues, and we need to see that. We need to know, as the family members, the loved ones of the people that are incarcerated, the inmates, the residents, the clients, whatever you want to call them, we want to know that we don't have to worry about their safety here. We know that a couple of months ago there was this big riot. It was extreme. It was racist. It was because of racism. We cannot afford to have things like that happen. There's families sitting on the edge of their tables hoping, when they don't hear from their loved ones, that they're alive, that nothing is happening. We have you guys here managing these jails. We need to know that you're using your power, and we know that you have influence for policy. We know that you guys are going to be sitting with the legislators. These things need to be mandated now. We need immediate no-tolerance bans on hate speech. That is an escalating vehicle. When somebody says something to someone, it escalates. It's happening in our schools, it's happening in our jails, it's happening in the streets.
And from our last meeting, where we were meeting, your communication was very clear. We've done the research and done the homework. At our meeting, I think you'll be very pleased with what we come up with.
All
because
right.
You're very clear on what your expectations were as a policy group. We've really made heard what you're saying, really want to come forward with that.
I want to see it in writing, because when I asked last time, I think I was told to do an open records request. I would like to see it in writing. If we're sitting at the table together, it shouldn't be a problem for us to exchange information.
Yeah.
If I have to go get an open records request, then why don't I just go to the Department of Justice and ask for an investigation? If we're at the table, that means there's an opportunity for us to do this together, right?
We want to just bring this to, you know, all of your attention. And when the inmates file those reports, if they do, because many of them, they don't, many Latino inmates don't even know that they can file grievances. They don't even understand the language. You know, they don't have access to translators. So that's another issue. So how is our community gonna be able to let you know what's happening in there if they don't know that they have, you know, the source, and they don't even understand what's happening? So that's another issue that we can address,
of
course.
Yeah, we have a lot of issues to discuss, and this obviously isn't the forum to have those conversations.
You mentioned on Friday that a Department of Justice investigation is one possible course of action. Is there any other alternative in terms of outside investigative authority that you would like to see come into these institutions and break up the institutionalized racism and the abuse that's happening?
Well, I can tell you right now, some of the supporters of Don't Shoot Portland have already spent thousands of dollars on outside investigators to basically take the complaints and to file, you know, research, to do their own research to see if we can accommodate that research with the investigation process. And we keep hitting those same walls. It's basically based on our state constitution and our laws. These people don't have to do too much of anything that we ask them to do, even when you have your own investigator. So the biggest thing that we do is utilize the Department of Justice. I really do think that the Department of Justice here in Oregon is a joke, because we know that they, pro organizations and activists, they're not too inclined to investigate things that need to be investigated. So I'm hoping that by doing the direct actions that we prompt the United States Department of Justice to take us a little seriously. And we're hoping that family members, people that know that these protests are happening, that have children that are in the schools and people that work in the workforce and people that are housed in these correction facilities, that they'll say, oh, well, this is where we can take our complaint, and that they'll be flooded with complaints through the United States Department of Justice. And then maybe we can get some probes that will matter. And if nothing else, in February, our legislators will see that that's where we're going, and they'll start enacting policies that ban hate speech and basically help us get the investigations covered. I know with Portland Public Schools, they're using courageous conversations instead of investigations. We want that to change immediately. I've been in some of those courageous conversations with children who have been assaulted by hate crimes and hate agendas. And it's not fair for a child to have to be in charge of protecting their own safety. You know, the courageous conversation doesn't do anything to affect change in regards to that. So
it seems
we're hoping that we are prompted as a state to look at these things as necessary for investigation.
It seems like the courageous aspect is referring to the courage that it takes people who aren't people of color, white people, in other words, to approach a conversation having to do with race, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, they want them to listen so that they can understand, and so that maybe they won't use racism as a tool of hatred. But I don't think that it's fair for the victims to sit there with someone who could care less about their humanity, who's already dehumanized them and assaulted them violently, whether it's language or physical force, to sit in a position to convince someone not to hate them. It doesn't make any sense, and especially when they're children. They shouldn't be put in that position. It, to me, it's very abusive. And it's even more sickening when you have agencies that get paid to carry that work out.
What can people do to show up for racial justice, I guess, and to take a stand? Like, what is there anything on the horizon in terms of actions?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, on December 11th, we're having a safety planning meeting at the Artist Repertory Theater. I believe it starts at 6 p.m., but we're going to be sitting there. It's a series of conversations and programs, strategies that we're going to share with the community to start fighting back. You know, education about what's going on so that they can figure out and develop planning strategies for safety in their communities, whether it's catching buses, walking back and forth to the store. We know that Larnell Bruce was actually killed while he was charging his phone up at a 7-Eleven. I don't know if you recognize that the guy who walked up on him during that time was actually from a racist organization, and I don't know what would have happened had he did know that.
Right.
Sorry, my phone keeps ringing, but yeah. I don't know if his mannerisms or if his reaction to what was happening would have been different, but I think that informing people makes a big difference. And right now, I can tell you myself, if I was standing next to a racist and they had tattoos and they had different patches on their clothes, I couldn't tell you if I was a racist or if it was just a hipster, you know? I don't know the difference myself, and I'm in this industry, so you can imagine that we're not safe if we don't know what it looks like, what it sounds like, where it might fester, and, you know, we need to start talking about that stuff. We can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing...
On December 11th, it's just going to be the first of a series of community planning meetings around safety and policy, and it's just going to explain and put partnerships together that can help make a difference, a direct change.
Do you mind talking a little bit about the councilman?
Daniel Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Daniel Benjamin, the councilman, city council for city of Salem. That was last Monday.
Uh-huh.
Like every Monday we get rid of racism. You know?
So can you talk about what he did and the actions that you took afterward to ensure that there was some sort of consequence?
Oh, absolutely. So what ended up happening with the city councilman from Salem is that he had been posting for months, really, very egregious postings, you know, about Muslims. He's very xenophobic from some of the postings. And the one that caught attention to a lot of people was the posting that he put up that showed people, like, it was a logistical strategy on how to run down Black Lives Matter protesters. And it was a video that showed you how to use your car to stop a protest. And when it was brought to my attention and people asked me what needed to be done, I basically stated that he needed to resign. Yeah, there were so many incidents that came up. Over 100 people came out to testify on the night of the city council meeting, and people had nothing good to say. Some people had brought up historical context of issues. They acknowledged to the city council that they knew that this was the type of person he was because of the past issues. And so it was pretty much on the record that he's been known for his racist views.
Well, good riddance then.
That's right. Well, that action was basically to tie in all of those forms of racism and white supremacy and say that there is no barrier between them. They all work contingently together. When we went to the Oregon Department of Education, we were asking for an immediate hate ban, zero tolerance on hate speech in the schools. And we asked the Oregon Department of Education, because they do have a civil rights head that's supposed to be in charge of jurisdictions of law and policy. Once we got there, we went to the Oregon Department of Corrections to ask for the same thing, because the safety in jails has escalated to the biggest issues, because we have European Kindred, which is the same as Russell Cordier's group, inside of those jails. And what we're learning in the school district is that they have children that are already calling themselves little Nazis. And the thing is our political structure here in Oregon, which allows hate speech, that's the determining factor of where a lot of people get their power. I think that those limitations on what we call free speech or the opportunity for hate speech to be protected, I think that that was done in reference and support of legislators and politicians who in the past have used that type of language.
This is KBOO Portland. And this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Seattle Theater Group, presenting comedian Tig Notaro, performing at Revolution Hall Friday, December 16th. Tickets are available for her 10:30 performance, and more information for Tig Notaro on December 16th can be found at revolutionhall.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey in Portland. Based on the 80s cult classic film Flash Gordon, Flash is Portland's premier rock opera parody, complete with a live rock band, Mercury Rising, formed at the School of Rock. Again, that's the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey, 126 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.